bumped hers in a show of support and solidarity. "Ruadan," I said, "we'd like to ask you some questions."
"About?"
No point in screwing around, I thought.
"About Tomas Cardona, the vampire killed at Cadogan House. Do you know anything about his death?"
"Why would we? He was a bloodletter. Our involvement with bloodletters has been minimal."
But his lips curled into a smile.
"You have come into our castle, so perhaps that will change."
"Our friend was wrongly accused of his murder," I said. "We're trying to help him."
His gaze darkened to storm clouds, and there were quiet murmurs around him in a language I didn't understand.
"You believe we have information regarding the murder of a bloodletter, or information that would acquit a shapeshifter?"
"We don't know, do you?"
"Be careful you do not put your trust in those who shift and change. Their inconsistency proves they are untrustworthy."
"Riley didn't kill Tomas." Lulu's voice was hard and certain. Like a well-oiled gear, Ruadan's head turned slowly toward Lulu.
"Are you making an accusation?"
"No," she said, and I felt her trembling beside me.
I shouldn't have let her come, I thought, regret and guilt twisting in my gut. That I shouldn't have come either wasn't the point. I was immortal, had a biological shield against my own stupidity. She didn't have the same protection. The murmurs rose to mutterings, to shifting feet and irritation. The curiosity that had gleamed in Ruadan's eyes evaporated, and they went hard as stone. Frankly, I preferred the anger to the creepy interest. Lean jaw clenched, he took a step forward, the scent of astringent herbs lifting into the air around him.
"You come into our territory without our permission to inquire if we have committed a crime."
I took a step forward, trying to draw his attention back to me. "We didn't ask if you'd committed a crime, but now that you've brought it up, did a fairy kill Tomas?"
"You are rude and presumptuous. Not that we would expect more of the others."
"You're right," I said. "It was rude and presumptuous to come here. Murder is also rude. I'll ask again. Did a fairy kill Tomas?"
His eyes flashed and his voice went low.
"We killed no one."
I noted the pin at the neck of his tunic. "Did any of your fairies lose a gold pin, by chance, at Cadogan House?" He jerked. Covered it quickly, but I'd seen the movement. He might not have known the pin had been lost, but he knew what it meant that it had been found. "You didn't know they were sloppy, did you? That they didn't just kill the vampire, throw magic over Riley, escape over the wall. They left a little something behind."
"You will return it," I shrugged.
"Don't have it," I said, and was glad I'd thought to leave it in the car, just in case they tried to take it back. "It's locked safely away."
"You dare threaten us?"
"No threats, just questions. And the only way questions could be a threat is if you're hiding something." Ruadan's jaw worked, as if chewing back angry words. Magic lifted again, this time cold and dark and angry. The mood had changed, and I knew there'd be no more conversation. I caught movement to my right. The semicircle of fairies was stretching, attempting to surround us. I took a step backward and pulled Lulu back with me, just a little closer to the door. Someone screamed words that were more song than battle cry. They were all fighters, and they all wanted their turn. My heart began to pound like a war drum, too eager for battle. I wrapped my right hand around the corded handle, ready to draw. You've gotten more vampire-y in my absence, Lulu murmured behind me.
Yeah, I said with a sunny smile. I'm a regular Dracula. I'm going to distract them, and you're going to run back to the car.
Fuck that, Lulu said, stepping beside me, rotating her wrist to spin her own blade. I'm not letting you have all the fun.
All right, I said, but be careful.
No promises.
I looked back at the fairy in front of me. He was thin like the others, tall and willowy, with dark skin and eyes. The blade of his sword gleamed in the moonlight. He stepped forward, and I met him. I unsheathed my katana and used it to push his away, then spun it back to slash horizontally across his chest, but didn't break skin. He jumped back, as spry as he was strong, then came in again with another overhead blow. I stopped it, but felt the impact echo through my arms. He lunged. I went low, kicked in a sweep that dropped him to the ground, and sent a ripple of disappointment through the crowd of fairies who watched. He managed to hold on to the sword, flipped onto his feet again. He swung the sword, stepping into it to increase the power. I rotated at the last second, and his blade still whooshed closely enough that I could feel the breeze on my face. I stayed in the spin, kicked his leg, sent him forward. The fairy pulled his sword up sharply, sent the blade singing against my shin. Fire erupted as the scent of blood filled the air.
First blood! Someone shouted.
The injury hurt, and I didn't like the precedent, but I was glad that they'd shed my blood first. If we survived long enough to deal with the fallout, it would help prove we hadn't intended the violence. I pushed down the pain and tried to ignore the monster's sudden interest in the battle, and then another fairy joined the fun. A dagger sliced through the air. This time I kicked up, hitting his wrist and sending the weapon skittering through the air. My second kick made contact with his jaw, snapped back his head. But he shook off the impact, then dove on me, sending us both to the ground. We grappled, blades clattering away, both of us trying to find the right grip, the superior move. In the scramble, his elbow connected with my face, and my knee caught his kidney. But neither of us found the move that would stop the other, and we both ended up on our feet again. On my left, Lulu was fighting another fairy in close combat, blades glinting as they spun. Her father had trained her well. She fought like a champ. But she wasn't immortal, and it was easy to see she was getting tired. Her arms were shaking from the effort of lifting the blade. I needed to get her out of here.
Get back to the car, I yelled, hoping she'd hear me over the noise of the fight. Fuck you too, she said, and blew hair from her face as she brought her sword down on a fairy's forearm.
He turned, but not fast enough. The blade sliced across his arm, raising a beaded line of blood that made the air smell of green things. The temptation was sudden. And it was strong, like blood and magic were combining to compel me to drink. My eyes silvered and my fangs descended, my fingers suddenly shaking with want. I had to clench my hands to hold myself back, to keep from falling at his feet, to drink the blood right from his veins. This was the lure of fairy blood, and I wasn't the only one interested. As if propelled by the desire, the monster broke through the barrier I'd erected to keep it quiet, to keep it secreted away. It rose like a flame, brilliant and hot in the darkness, burning away everything around it. A red haze covered my vision, and I knew my eyes had turned the same color, a side effect of the monster's magic. As it took control, hatred rose in my stomach like bile. I heard a scream. Realized a moment later, when my throat felt like I'd swallowed broken glass, that I'd been the one who'd made the sound. With the monster in control, I jumped forward toward the fairy. I fell on him, and we hit the ground together in a tangle of arms and legs, trying to get in a strike. I made contact first, landed a punch on his cheekbone that made his head thud dully against the ground. And because that wasn't enough for the monster, I hit him again.
Lise! Lise! Elisa!
I heard Lulu's voice but couldn't pull myself to the surface. The monster was too strong.
Snap out of it, she said.
The fairy beneath me, his gaze still unfocused, grabbed my hands. And then my ankles were drawn together, my feet tangled. I was dragged backward, and the shock was enough to shake the monster loose. It wanted freedom, but it didn't want me dead, because that wouldn't serve its purpose. That wouldn't set it free. I looked back. Thin green vines had snaked around my ankles and were working their way up my calves, and others were rising from the ground like a nest of snakes, headed for my wrists. I shifted, pulling the tendrils around my ankles. A few snapped, putting more of that vegetal scent into the air. But more vines pushed through the stones to replace them and shackled me like iron.
Elisa!
Lulu was on her knees a few feet away, vines around her ankles, her wrists bound together. This time there was fear in her eyes. Ruadan knelt beside me, pulled a dagger from a leather holster at his waist, held it up in the moonlight. And then the blade was at my throat, and I stopped moving. I knew what fairies with blades did to vampires.
It would be a shame to kill you, he said. You are an interesting specimen, and I wish to know more about you, and your magic.
I'm just a vampire.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
He angled the blade just enough to prick, and I felt the trickle of blood at my neck. The look in his eyes made my stomach clench harder. Surprise and shock. Interest and intrigue. Ruadan dabbed a droplet of my blood with a long, pale fingertip, then flicked his tongue to taste it.
Power, he quietly said, and there was too much interest in his eyes.
My blood chilled as I realized he'd recognized something about the monster. Maybe not all the details, about the history or the origin, but he knew there was magic that wasn't just vampiric. Before I could respond, there was a howl outside the gatehouse, and the sound was full of anger and rage. It came at a full run, earth pounding beneath huge paws. Silver fur and ivory fangs glinted in the moonlight, and the scents of pine and smoke and animal lifted on the wind. It wasn't until it reached us, until I saw its icy blue eyes, that I knew we weren't in danger from him. Connor. My heart pounded with a new kind of ferocity. He bit through the tangle of vines at my feet. There was an answering scream in the crowd of fairies, as if his teeth had met their flesh. There must have been some magical connection to the one who'd woven the magic. That was enough to have the other tendrils around Lulu and me shrinking back. She ran toward me, helped me to my feet. My legs felt heavy, shaky. Maybe because of the fairy magic. Maybe because of the fight. Maybe because of the monster. Connor looked us both over, eyes narrowed, then moved in front, putting his body between us and the fairies. He surveyed them, then paced in front of them, anger rumbling in his throat. His ears lay flat, his stance slow. He was big and dangerous, and he was ready to fight. I was shocked, awed, and a little unnerved. Not just because he'd found us and was obviously trying to protect us, but because he was showing us who he was. Letting Lulu and me see his animal form, the sacred part of himself only other shifters would normally see.
Connor reached Ruadan and bared his teeth, made another threatening growl that lifted goosebumps on my arms.
"Animal," Ruadan spat, lip curled in obvious disgust.
He clearly didn't have any love for vampires, but he seemed to loathe shifters even more. Connor growled again, and Ruadan inhaled sharply, nostrils flaring. Two fairies stepped forward, one on each side of their leader, and drew their blades. This was no longer fairies versus vampires. It was fairies versus pack. And that, I thought, might make the difference.
"You have a decision to make," I said, my voice hoarse from screaming. "Do you want to hurt the prince and take on the entire pack? You know they're dangerous. Untrustworthy," I said, throwing his word back at him. "And very, very powerful. I doubt you'd enjoy that fight. And I doubt your queen would either."
There was a hot burst of magic as insults spread around the room. They might have obeyed Ruadan, protected him, but Claudia was still their queen. Ruadan's lip curled, his fingers fisted so tightly his knuckles were white. But he didn't make a move. It probably wasn't a coincidence that he hadn't made any moves except when I'd been bound. He murmured something softly, the sounds shifting between soft vowels and hard consonants, the language old and powerful. Whatever he said, his fairies got the point. The tension of their bodies, their stances, loosened. But their eyes grew no kinder. They were angry, partly because of the intrusion, partly because Ruadan had leashed them again. He'd riled them to a fight, and they wanted the satisfaction.
"We're leaving," I said, and Connor stepped closer to me, his fur, so soft, brushing against my fingers like a whisper. I picked up my sword and turned Lulu so she went first, so my back was to the fairies. Connor padded behind us, and we ran down the path toward the car. 14.
Thelma, low and menacing in a spear of moonlight, sat beside Lulu's car. The wolf padded onto the road behind us, then circled around to face us, lips curled back over gleaming teeth. Connor was still a wolf, and he was pissed.
"I don't recall inviting you along on this little adventure," Lulu said to him. "So we aren't the only ones who have explaining to do."
It was the driest look I'd ever seen on an animal. Maybe that's why he didn't warn us before light filled the darkness, searing across my retinas as magic engulfed him. It whirled around his body, sending energy and the scents of pine needles and fur into the air. I'd never stood in the sun, never felt sunshine on my bare skin. But the scent of him made me think of those things. The lights spun like a cyclone and dissipated just as suddenly, lights streaking into darkness and leaving Connor Keene completely, utterly naked.
"Clothes are on my bike," he said, running a hand through his hair, and walked toward Thelma.
I'd never seen Connor with so much as a shirt off, and that had been my loss entirely. His body was perfection. Wide shoulders that led to a flat stomach and narrow waist, strong arms and legs, every inch of him toned from hard work and activity. I couldn't look away, and didn't want to. Muscle rippled and shifted as he moved, and I had to fight back against the instinct to reach out and touch, run fingers down the taut skin that covered his abdomen or the sleek curve of his back. Connor glanced back at me, and there was plenty of ego in the look. Having seen the product, I couldn't argue with the ego. But the realization that I'd just fantasized about Connor unsettled me. Who was I? Lulu gave him a two-fingered whistle.
The ensemble is fantastic. He flipped her off.
I mean, he is just delectable, Lulu said quietly.
He's not bad, was all I was willing to give him. I was still too disturbed by the fact that I found him attractive.
You could bounce a quarter off his ass.
I can hear you, Lulu, he called back, pulling on jeans and a t-shirt.
He glanced back, and there was no hiding the masculine pride in his eyes.
Wolf hearing, remember?
Yes, I know, Lulu said with a thin smile. Connor sat on the edge of the bike to pull on his boots, then ran a hand through his hair. I figured his transformation was complete enough for us to talk again.
What the hell are you doing here? I said when we walked toward him.
Saving your ass, apparently. What are you doing here? You're supposed to be the good one.
The good one? I asked. What does that mean?
It means you're supposed to be smart enough to do the right thing, to follow the rules, and not walk into a fight.
I did the right thing, I told him with barely veiled fury. We didn't come to argue. We came to ask questions, to help Riley. We didn't ask you to barge in. Bootlaces still hanging, his shirt not quite snugged down to cover the strapping muscle over his hips, he glared at me.
The rules don't say anything about barging into a fairy castle.
They opened the damn doors, I gritted out. And since when do you come riding to Vampire's rescue? I asked, brow arched as high as I could make it. I thought shifters stayed out of politics.
You'd better be glad I made an exception.
We were handling ourselves, I said.
Oh, good, Lulu muttered. Connor and Elise are fighting. Shock. Surprise.
Can it, Belle? Connor said, but didn't spare her a glance.
How'd you know we were here? I asked, gaze narrowed.
I followed you from the loft.
You did not, Lulu said.
I did. Need to learn to spot a tail, witch.
Don't call me witch, puppy.
Connor's lip curled. Focus, I said, and looked at Connor. Why were you at the loft? His jaw worked.
Because you seem to think you're Sherlock Holmes.
I'm Holmes, Lulu said. She's Watson.
He closed his eyes for a moment, as if gathering patience.
If you're willing to dig in the dirt at Cadogan House, he said, opening them again and arrowing in on me. I thought you might do something else, stupid.
He gestured toward the castle. Riley wouldn't have done this, I said. But we're the only ones who seem to understand that. And until we prove it, the real killer goes free.
He's my friend, too, Connor said. He's my friend, my packmate. He's family, and my responsibility.
You aren't Apex yet, I said.
Yet, he said, his gaze so intense it might have bored into me.
Here's an idea, Lulu said. Let's get the hell out of here and you two can continue arguing somewhere else.
She looked back at the tower. I don't think we're guaranteed they won't try for round two. Connor nodded.
There's a diner up the road, the Carpathian.
The Carpathian, as in the mountains in the Ukraine? I wondered. The pack had strong connections to the Ukraine. His smile was wolfish.
The mountains are in the Ukraine, and the restaurant is here. It's one of ours. Meet me there.
He pointed a finger at each of us.
And no detours.
He pulled on his helmet, climbed onto his bike, kick-started the engine. The bike growled to life, and it sounded as sexy as it looked. With one last glance at me, he drove off into darkness.
Is it irritating that he expects us to follow him? Lulu asked.
Yes, I said. But it was our best option. On the way, can we discuss in detail how good he looks naked? Almost makes it worth his testy teenage years. Shaking my head, and more than a little flustered to find I agreed with her, I followed her back to the car. I checked my injuries in the car. The cut at my neck was nearly invisible, the slice along my shin deeper, but knitting together nicely. My cheekbone was bruised, and the mark would take longer to disappear. Bruises always did. The Carpathian wasn't the typical shifter hang, if there was such a thing, given that the NAC Industries building probably blew the curve on what was typical. It was a train car, long and silvery blue, its metal gleaming in the moonlight. The roof was curved, the sides pinstriped, the narrow windows glowing between crisp white curtains. Hydrangeas with white clouds of flowers lined the metal staircase that led into the entrance door. The bike was already there when we pulled into the gravel lot. Connor leaned against it, helmet propped on the seat, screen in hand. He put it away when we walked toward him, then reached out, ran a thumb lightly across my cheekbone. "You're hurt," he said, tilting my chin into the light. "Your father will see that." I ignored the frisson of heat from his touch. "I'll heal."
"I'm sure you will. Make sure he doesn't do anything rash."
"He never does," I said. My father was the most controlled person I knew. We walked inside, found a dozen narrow booths lining the walls and a kitchen at the other end. Four of the tables were occupied, one by a single, three by couples old and young, who talked quietly and clearly enjoyed their food. There was a small stand at the other end of the train car, nestled between the wall and the door to the kitchen, where a turntable spun a violin concerto that rolled softly through the air.
"It's intimate," Lulu whispered.
"And friendly," Connor said, watching a woman walk toward us.
She was slender, with pale skin, dark hair, and enormous eyes set in a heart-shaped face. She wore a white apron over trim, dark pants and a dark shirt, and kept her gaze on Keen.
"Keen," she said when she reached us, then looked us over. "Natalia?"
She said something in what I guessed was Ukrainian. He responded in the same language. More talking, and a glance at the smears of grime on Lulu's clothes, the bruise on my cheek. Her eyes narrowed.
"There will be no trouble here," she said, voice thickly accented.
"None," Connor agreed. "The trouble was left behind."
After another moment of hesitation, she relented, pointed to a booth, asked another question.
"Tuck," Connor said with a nod. Natalia walked to the bar, and he put out a hand, gestured us into the booth.
Lulu slid in, and I slid beside her. Connor took the other bench.
"It's been a long time since we've done a late night in a diner," Lulu said, gaze tracking across the restaurant's interior.
"I'm sure that was entertaining for everyone," Connor said.
I crossed one leg over the other. "We didn't have money, so we'd order black coffee and eat the free crackers and jelly."
"How did you not have money? Your parents are Cadogan House."
"Not a lot of part-time jobs for teenagers who could only work at night. I did chores in the house, but that money only went so far."
His smile was dubious. "Because you had a staff to pay?"
"Because she has a coffee habit," Lulu said, and pulled a paper menu from the holder at the edge of the table, handed one to me.
Only a few items were on the menu, and all of them had at least one indecipherable ingredient. There were four kinds of artisanal water.
"You still picky?" Connor asked.
With a vampire metabolism, I'd wanted nothing but blood, grilled cheeses, and chocolate chip cookies growing up.
Thankfully, I'd grown out of that stage. I usually eat what's available, I said, giving him a thin smile. No one likes a hangry vampire. Natalia came back, put glasses of water, artisanal status undetermined, in front of us on the table. Then she looked at Connor expectantly. Because he's the shifter, I wondered, or the only one she trusts to order from their very particular menu.
3 burgers, Connor said. Set us up.
Of course,
she nodded, then turned and walked back to the kitchen.
Are you under the impression we can't order for ourselves? Lulu asked testily.
Shifter place, shifter rules. If I order, they think I'm in charge. Makes it easier for everyone.
Because you're you? I wondered. Or because I'm a vampire? The incident at Little Red had made it clear that anti-vamp prejudices still ran through the pack. He watched me for a moment, as if carefully considering his answer.
Both, he finally said. And the burgers are good.
Lulu crossed her arms.
We'll see.
He's a wolf, I pointed out. Probably knows good meat from bad.
One of my many skills. And now that we're out of danger, please explain to me why you two decided to start a war by storming a literal fairy castle in the middle of the night.
The pin belonged to one of the fairies, I said. The one I found near the Cadogan House patio. Connor's brows lifted.
How do you know?
She took video of the reception, Lulu said. We reviewed the evidence and reached a conclusion based on the same.
Thank you, CSI.
His tone was dry as dust. Lulu saluted.
And, BT Dubs, your girlfriend is a firecracker. That panther routine?
She mimicked wiping sweat from her brow.
Impressive.
She's not my girlfriend. We aren't together anymore.
Oh, well, damn, Lulu said. I will cease harassing you on that topic and congratulate your good decision-making.
Connor rolled his eyes, shifted his gaze to me.
So, the pin belonged to a fairy. Was the fairy at the party?
I don't know. If he was, I didn't see him. We'd have to talk to Kelly, or maybe Theo, about that. See if the Cadogan surveillance video revealed anything else.
Why did they let us go? I asked, working that over. Because they're smart, Lulu said. They realized they don't want the wrath of Cadogan House and the pack raining down upon them.
Maybe, I thought. They had backed down after Connor had arrived. But that look in Ruidon's eyes, that interest, made me wonder if we'd been allowed to leave because he had something else planned. I had no idea what that might be, but I had a sinking feeling, after that talk about power, it had something to do with me. Didn't matter. I'd handle it just like I'd handled the fight. Natalia returned, put plates of food in front of us. A waiter behind her added glasses of beer.
Jakuyu,
Connor said, and she nodded, left to check on the other patrons. Her expression changed completely when she reached them. She smiled, which softened her features, put a hand on their shoulders, chatted with them quietly. It took me a minute to realize why, to recognize the magic that lingered in the air. I looked at Connor. Are we the only non-shifters in the restaurant? He pulled pickles, onions, tomatoes, lettuce off his burger, piled them on the side of his plate. They barely had time to settle before Lulu grabbed them, piled them onto hers.
Yes, he said, then took a bite. And the salad is unnecessary.
Textures, Lulu said, then sawed at the entire pile to cut it in half, then in quarters.
Then she picked up a wedge, bit off the pointed end.
You still do that?
She looked at Connor, chewed.
I don't like putting my face into food. I'd rather bring the food to my face.
You're an odd duck, Belle.
At least I'm not literally a duck, Keen.
You're well aware what I am, Belle.
True, she said, winging up her eyebrows. I hadn't yet tasted the food, so I grabbed a fry from Connor's plate, chewed. He stopped chewing mid-bite.
What the hell, Sullivan?
Lulu smiled, shook her head. You think I'm a weird eater? She prefers to eat other people's food. Freaking fry thief. Fries from someone else's plate always taste better, I said, finishing off the one I'd stolen. You can have some of mine.
That is empirically false, Connor said. And I don't want your fries. I want my own fries.
I shrugged, reached unapologetically for a fry from Lulu's plate. She slapped my hand away. Bad vampire! Eat your own food! Fine. I gathered up the burger, took a bite. Not bad, I said, and took another. I'm surprised this place doesn't make the Chicago top 10 list.
It does, Connor said. Just not the human list. Riley eats four of these at a time.
His smile fell away with the memory. Maybe the ombudsman would let you bring him one?
I doubt it, he said sourly. Dearborn's a dick. If he wasn't, Riley wouldn't be in prison right now.
It's because he looks big and dangerous, Lulu said. He has plenty of muscle and power to back that up, but he has an enormous heart.
So why did you break up with him?
Connor asked. Her gaze lifted. He didn't tell you? Connor shook his head.
I know it wasn't what he wanted, but he didn't talk about it. Riley's easygoing, but he's not one for talking about his emotions.
She looked up at the ceiling, as if wishing for strength to get to it. We were getting serious, and it was getting harder for me to, I guess, avoid his magic.
To avoid it? Connor asked.
I made a conscious decision not to do magic. Dating a shifter is like being ensconced in it. A lot. She looked at me. More than just vampire magic, because with vampires, the magic is mostly driven by emotions. You get nervous or excited or really hungry, and you throw off a little magic. But with shifters, it's all the time. It's in the air.
And the ground, Connor said. It's part of our connection to the natural world, or the result of it.
Lulu swirled the beer in the glass, watching the liquid spin. It was becoming more difficult to be around him and still say no to using my magic. I loved him, she said. It just wasn't right for me.
I'm sorry, Lulu, Connor said,
and I saw only compassion in his eyes. Maybe for Lulu, maybe for his friend, maybe for a relationship broken because love hadn't been enough. It's all right, she said with a smile she was obviously fighting to keep in place. It was hard. It sucked. And we both lived through it. She looked up at Connor, at me. Get him out of this. Whether we work together or not, he's being used, and that's not fair. Working on it, I said, and put my hand over hers, squeezed. But when I went to pull away, she didn't let go. I love you, she said to me. And I tolerate you, she said to Connor. But I'm going to bow out of any further fairy-related adventures.
You held your own, Connor said, which was high praise from a shifter. But Lulu wasn't moved.
Oh, I know. I'm a Belle and I can handle a blade. And tonight I did what needed to be done. Hopefully it actually gets us somewhere. She glanced at me. But I think I got it out of my system. I just want to make art and drink good wine and binge unhealthy television. Is that so wrong? I smiled at her. That's the cool thing about being a grown-up. You get to set your own boundaries. A novel idea, she murmured, and I guessed she was thinking about our parents. Then she pushed back her plate and slid me a glance. I think we also need to talk about the elephant in the room. What elephant in the room? I asked. But I could see it in her eyes, the concern and worry, and the thread of fear behind it. They mixed shame and guilt in my belly. Her fingers stayed tight around mine. The berserker thing. She dropped her voice to a whisper. Your eyes went red. Really, really red. I had a moment of panic. She'd just told us she didn't want to be involved in any more magical drama. I couldn't tell her now. Couldn't confess that I was brimming with magical drama. Wouldn't that just push her farther away?
Fairy magic, Connor said, looking completely unruffled by the lie.
He'd always been very good with a bluff. He stretched his legs under the table and nudged my foot with his to keep me from talking, and to offer comfort. She tilted her head. What? He lifted a shoulder, the move utterly casual and confident.
It does freaky things to vampires.
Connor Keane, former teenage punk, had lied to protect me. I stared at him, equally shocked by the action and suspicious that it was part of some ploy. But then again, he'd protected me the first time, too. We'd been in high school, or Connor and Lulu had. I was still homeschooled by tutors at night at the house. There'd been a party at Cadogan our parents were attending, so we'd gone to get pizza at a place called Saul's, one of my mother's favorites. Lulu had left her phone in the auto, and she'd gone outside to grab it. 2 minutes, she'd said, and made us promise to order her favorite twisty breadsticks if the waiter returned while she was outside. 5 minutes later, she wasn't back yet. I'd gone outside to check on her, and I'd found her on the ground, eyes closed and skin pale. I'd had a bad moment of panic, thinking she'd been killed, but her chest was still rising and falling, so she was still breathing. A man had stood over her, rifling through her backpack while his partner in crime yelled through the window of the apparent getaway car for him to hurry up and get in. But he didn't move. Just looked down at Lulu with lust in his eyes as his fingers rifled blindly through her bag. The rage rose so suddenly, so blindingly, that there'd been no way to fight back against the monster. I'd jumped forward, sent us both to the ground. I'd ripped Lulu's bag out of his hands, tossed it aside, and then I'd pummeled him. Beaten him for hurting her, for stealing her stuff, for the look in his eyes as he'd surveyed her small form, and for whatever reasons the monster had had, whatever had fueled and driven its rage. I couldn't stop. Connor found us outside, pulled the driver out of the car, then pulled me off the attacker. And he'd held my arms while I screamed and writhed, until the monster receded and I could breathe again. Until I was just me again. And then the shock set in as I'd stared down at the man on the concrete with a mix of horror and fear. Connor hadn't been horrified, only worried about Lulu, about me. You protected her, he'd said as he'd waited for me to calm down, and then as we waited for the cops. In the hospital, the attacker had raved about monsters attacking him, and the CPD assumed he'd meant vampires and shifters. He'd been partially right. Connor was the only one who'd seen my eyes, who'd seen my rage. And for 7 years, he hadn't spoken a single word about it. Lulu sat back and crossed her arms, looking between me and Connor. I think I knew it did something, but not to this degree. It was the blood, I said quietly, hating the omission but making it anyway. The fairy blood. It has a different kind of lure to vampires. It's more powerful,
harder to resist. That part at least was absolutely true.
Could be your genetics too, Connor said. Magic helped make you after all. Possible contender for understatement of the year.
Could be, I said, sipping my beer and hoping Lulu hadn't noticed the blood had probably drained from my face. Connor still hadn't shifted his legs, broken that connection between us.
He's into you.
I jerked, looked up at Lulu.
What? Ruidon.
It took a moment for my brain to switch gears, and when it did, her confirmation of my fear didn't make me feel any better. I'd seen his interest too, of course, but I knew it wasn't romantic, even if I couldn't explain to her how I knew.
Explain, Connor said, with more than a little force behind the word.
Lulu studied me, gaze narrowed in concentration.
I don't know. He just looks at her, I guess, maybe covetously? But I thought he was with Claudia.
Connor's body wasn't relaxed anymore. He shifted too, sitting up and leaning over the table, icy blue eyes intent on mine.
Covetously? He asked.
It's the same old, I said. He's political and probably thinks there's something I can get him. And that was all I was willing to say aloud. Connor clearly didn't believe me, but he was wise enough not to push the issue.
We have to talk to the ombudsman, my parents. Tell them what we've got and what happened tonight.
We don't have anything, Connor said. We have a pin, some speculation.
He glanced up, gaze settling on my face.
And a bruise. None of that is going to free Riley. None of it is going to convince the ombudsman that he's got the wrong man, especially if the other option is creating a supernatural war.
I didn't disagree that our case was weak, but we couldn't sit on this.
Your dad will freak out, Lulu said.
She's 23, Connor said.
Lulu snorted.
Like that matters. You've met him before, right?
He's more than 400 years old, I said. A lot of ego accumulates in that time. And no, he won't like it, but he'll get over it. Something's going on. Something bigger than Riley or the talks. Something involving the fairies. They need to know.
Then it would all be out in the open,
which I realized I'd prefer. I didn't mind investigating carefully, but this was an entirely different kind of sneaking around, and it felt beneath all of us.
I think we're ready to go here, Lulu said, glancing around.
I'm ready, I said.
I'll pay, Connor said,
and pressed the credit chip on his key fob against the circle on the table. It beeped, then glowed green. Lulu frowned at it.
I wonder if the chip reader finds satisfaction in its life.
Would you? Connor asked.
That's a pretty profound question for a shifter.
But when Connor narrowed his eyes at her, Lulu lifted her hands.
All in fun, my friend, all in fun. You're like the protective older brother I never had, and never really wanted.
15.
The burger was good, Lulu said, when Connor joined us again in the parking lot.
They have a good hand with food, he said, then looked at me. Time to do the right thing, I told myself, even if it stings a little.
I'm not admitting we needed you, but thanks for helping us out there. It was moving toward ugly.
You're welcome, he said.
I nodded, feeling like there was more to be said, but not entirely sure what that should be.
Lise will be right there, he said, and walked a few feet away, gravel crunching underfoot.
Apparently, I was supposed to follow obediently, which I did, eventually. Lulu watched us with lifted brows, but went to the car, climbed inside.
Thanks for being cool about Lulu. About the breakup.
His expression was amused, but there was mild insult in his eyes.
What did you think I was going to say to her?
I don't know. The point is, you didn't.
I like Lulu, he said. She's like the little sister I never really wanted.
Well, thanks. I'm still getting used to mature Connor.
You're hilarious.
Thank you. His expression went flat.
That's not what I wanted to talk to you about.
I didn't think it had been, and I braced myself for a conversation I didn't want to have.
Does it hurt you?
I blinked. That's not what I'd expected him to ask.
No, it's fine, and I'm handling it. Are you? Because you aren't acting like you're handling it. If you were handling it, you wouldn't be hiding it.
I looked back at Lulu. She pulled out her screen and was making a big effort to look everywhere else except at us. I'm handling it, I said again, each word a battle that I struggled to win. I turned away, but he grabbed my arm.
I don't think so, he said, eyes shifting as he searched my face. Even I can see that you're walking a very dangerous line.
I just looked away.
Trying to ignore it, trying to push it down, isn't going to help you. Not in the long run. But maybe you could learn to control it.
Irritation began to buzz along my skin. I knew he was trying to help, but that didn't make me any less angry at his polite suggestions. I'd been living with the monster, had been fighting the monster, since I'd been old enough to recognize its voice, to understand that I wasn't just angry or psychotic, but invaded.
You don't know what you're talking about.
His eyes went dark and he moved a step closer.
I know better than anyone, Elisa. I've seen what it can do to you.
Memory flashed, sharp as a dagger, and I could all but smell blood in the air. Destruction is what it can do for me. Pain.
That's true of any power. It just has to be managed.
Look, he said, his voice softening.
If you don't want to do that, maybe there's a way to strip it out again. Someone who can use magic to remove it.
That someone was dead. Sorcha, the one who'd created the egregore, had been killed by her own creation. I don't need advice, and I'm not going to apologize for who I am. Not when it wasn't my fault. His eyes went hard, jaw tight with frustration.
No one asked you to apologize, and there is no mistaking who you are. You're stubborn and brave and goddamned dumbfounding at times, and it's not like you to give up.
The anger turned up to a full boil. I'm not giving up anything, except this conversation. But next time I'm looking for magic advice, I'll be sure to give you a call. I walked back to the car, leaving him standing behind me. You all right? Lulu asked when I climbed into her car. That looked like a pretty heated argument. Just a difference of opinion. The car was silent and still while she looked me over, evaluated. That's what you're going with?
Yep.
All right, then. Buckle up, Buttercup, and we'll hit the road. Can you take me back to the hotel? I need to check in with Sari. Sure thing. We were halfway back when my screen beeped, signaling an incoming message. I pulled it out, found Sari's number. Hey, Sari, what's up?
We are leaving, Lise.
What do you mean, leaving?
We are going to the airport, leaving Chicago tonight.
Who is we?
The delegates of France.
I was floored. If the delegates walked away, that was it for the talks and the chance for peace, and I didn't know where it left me. Sari, you can't leave. Not now. If we want peace, we have to keep working at it. We can't just walk away. That's probably what they want anyway, to break up the talks. We can't give in, even if it's dangerous.
Lise, There was no peace to find here, but there is work to be done at home.
I needed to do something, although I had no idea what that would be, because even if I wanted her to be wrong, I understood her fear. I had to believe she wasn't right, that there was always a chance Europe's vampires could put aside self-interest and think about the future.
Just hold on, Sari, okay? Wait for me at the airport.
I didn't know what I'd do at the airport, how I'd make them change their minds, but I had to try. There was silence for a moment, then,
I'll stall as long as I can, Lise, but I must go.
The call ended, and I stared at the screen for a moment, my mind racing like my emotions. Then I looked at Lulu. I need a favor. 15 minutes later, Lulu squealed to a stop outside the private terminal. I climbed out of the car, a little shocked we hadn't gotten crushed along the way, and ran inside. It was late, and the building was empty. The plane waited outside. Sari and Odette, the only vampires in sight, were climbing the stairs.
Ma'am?
Asked the desk attendant as I blew past toward the door, then rushed outside and into a plume of heat and wind.
Ma'am!
She yelled, and I heard her chair squeak as the door slammed behind me. I ran toward the plane.
Sari!
She turned, a black pashmina around her shoulders, leather leggings and black stilettos below. A dark ribbon held her hair at the nape of her neck, the long ends of grosgrain blowing in the wind.
Attends,
she said, and offered her bag to Odette, then climbed down to the tarmac.
Marion and Victor believe it is best to return, she said. The French delegates have voted, and we must abide by that decision.
Sari, I know this is hard for everyone, but if you leave, the other delegates will follow. The entire summit will fall apart, and Tomas's death will have been for nothing. I looked up at the open door. I should have reported to Marion sooner, but it's been a long night, and I haven't had a chance. I could talk to her, explain what's happening, what I think the next steps should be. Sari leaned in close to look at my face.
You are injured.
I'm fine. It's nothing. It was... there was... How was I supposed to tell her that the thing she feared, more violence, was exactly what had happened? A difference of opinion, I settled on. And we're getting closer to figuring out what happened. We've been investigating and gathering evidence. Riley didn't do this. She looked surprised.
You have another suspect?
I had a video of a fairy who looked nearly exactly like every other fairy.
Not exactly, I said, but we're working on it. Just talk to Marion and ask her to give me some more time, to give the process one more chance.
I stayed in Paris, I reminded her. Even when there was violence, I stayed, because I wanted to help. For the first time, I saw guilt in her eyes.
I am sorry. You are braver than me, Elisa. Perhaps you are braver than all of us.
I dropped my arm, stared at her. And what about me? They weren't just leaving Chicago. They were leaving me behind. I was the escort, the vampire who was supposed to accompany them here and back again safely. But they hadn't given me a heads up, or time to pack, or a ticket for the ride. I didn't know exactly what this meant for my service, my tenure with Maison Dumas, but it surely didn't mean anything good. This time, Sari's smile looked forced.
You will follow us when you are ready, of course.
Then she leaned forward, pressed a kiss to my cheek.
We will see you in Paris, Alisa. Be safe.
Seraphine!
One of Marion's assistants, a skinny man in a dark suit, leaned out of the door and waved his hand.
Allons-y!
With an apologetic smile, she strode quickly back to the plane, offered a wave as she took the first step,
then disappeared up the stairs. I made myself walk back inside, forced my feet across the terminal and back to Lulu's car.